This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, May 11th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll get a debrief from the Colorado Sun's political reporter on what did and did not pass during the legislative session. Then, we'll have a sweet radio nibbles with John Lindorf and two guests, Kevin and Heidi from Nilo Bees. We'll talk about bees, pollinators, and catching a buzz. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's Black Talk with Michelle Simpson. At 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead. But first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Severe storms over the last 2 days have led to hail damage, power outages, and flight delays in the state. Colorado's first tornado of 2023 was spotted in the eastern plains on Wednesday, and several others were sighted in Washington County. A tornado watch was in effect for much of the Denver metro area as well, which saw hail and thunderstorms. Hail as big as 4 inches wide was reported in Morgan County. Almost 4,000 Xcel Energy customers in Lafayette lost power temporarily in the afternoon, and by 5 p.m. Wednesday, over 600 flights had been delayed to and from Denver International Airport, and over 100 were canceled. The storm system is expected to linger today and tomorrow with a flood watch in effect until 6 a.m. Friday. Governor Jared Polis signed two bills into law Wednesday that improve how healthcare organizations inform and involve Coloradans. House Bill 1218 will require certain healthcare facilities to report all services, including those that they deny for non-medical reasons, such as abortion or gender-affirming care. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment will publish the information on their website twice a year. House Bill 1243 addresses how hospitals use their community benefit spending. The law will require hospitals to seek feedback from underprivileged communities such as low-income residents, people of color, and people with disabilities. The Department of Health Care Policy and Financing will organize public feedback sessions and produce an annual report that tracks benefit spending and its impacts on the community. Gun safety organizations are praising Colorado lawmakers for passing an historic number of gun bills. Colorado chapters of Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action released a statement Wednesday saying politicians' actions during the 2023 legislative session showed they care about saving lives by prioritizing gun violence prevention measures. According to EveryStat, gunfire kills more than 900 people and wounds over 450 people in Colorado every year. Bills signed into law in April, such as House Bill 1219 and Senate Bills 169 and 170, were designed to prevent suicides and homicides. 1219 requires a 3-day wait period between purchasing and taking possession of a weapon. 169 raises the minimum age to purchase a firearm from 18 to 21. 170 expanded the state's red flag law so that healthcare providers, mental health providers, district attorneys, and teachers can petition a judge to order the temporary seizure of firearms from those deemed to pose a significant risk to their own safety or to the safety of others. Other legislation included Senate Bill 279, which prohibits the making, owning, and or selling of 3D printed guns, also called ghost guns. And Senate Bill 168 made it easier for the families of shooting victims to sue gun makers. A Denver-based marketing company will pay the state over $20,000 for selling the personal information of thousands of Coloradans without their consent. Attorney General Phil Weiser announced Wednesday that Efficient, which uses digital ads to find customers for its clients, had launched a fake campaign to influence the Federal Communications Commission in 2017 when it was considering repealing net neutrality rules. Efficient used online incentives to gather names, addresses, and opinions on net neutrality. The company then sold the information to its broadband industry clients, falsely claiming that the consumers had consented to the use of their comments for the campaign. Weiser also recently finalized the Colorado Privacy Act rules, which grant Coloradans the right to access, correct, and delete personal data collected from them by businesses and nonprofits. The Boulder Valley School District is making progress on a bilingual program that will start in the fall at Angevine Middle School in Lafayette. The Daily Camera reports school leaders discussed the latest updates during Tuesday's board meeting. Over 50 students have enrolled in the Angevine program, which will include a few core and elective classes in Spanish for 6th graders and Spanish language arts for 7th graders. Previously, students who wanted to continue bilingual courses after 5th grade had only 2 middle school options located in Boulder, Casey, or Manhattan. The Angevine program will give students in the eastern part of the county a closer option. Dual language elementary programs are already in place at Columbine and University Hill in Boulder and Lafayette's Escuela Bilingüe Pioneer. As part of May's National Bike Month, the Louisville Police Department is starting a new registration program to help people recover lost or stolen bicycles. The effort is a partnership between Louisville Police and Bike Index, the largest recovery database in the country. Residents can fill out a simple online form to register their bicycle on Louisville's government website at louisvilleco.gov/bike-registration. In today's weather, thunderstorms and rain, northern foothills, Denver metro area northward to Fort Collins and the northeast plains have a flood watch for flash flooding caused by excessive rainfall, which will be possible through late tonight. In Boulder, a high near 54 with a low around 46. In Denver and Fort Collins, highs near 56, a low in the mid-40s. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Colorado's legislative session ended this week with a flurry of 11th-hour activity over the weekend and on Monday. Joining me live to walk us through the highlights is Colorado Sun political reporter and editor, Jesse Aaron Paul. Good morning.
Good morning.
So a lot happens each legislative session, of course, and you were there in the thick of it covering the day today. But if you had to just zoom back after a couple of days of breathing time and summarize the last few months at the Capitol in 90 seconds or less, how would you describe it?
I would say it was a pretty acrimonious session. This was my sixth session at the Capitol, and certainly this was probably the most vitriolic, as Democrats kind of learned how to flex their muscles with their expanded majorities. Republicans contended with the political reality that they were really in a deficit in the House and Senate. And, you know, progressives tried to push through some really big policies. They weren't successful in their first year. And, you know, Governor Jared Polis failed in his big housing initiative and what was one of his, you know, biggest defeats of his, you know, 5 or 6 years, I guess, now leading the state. So it was pretty interesting. The political dynamics were fascinating. And I think the wrap of this session would be that there's a lot more work to do, that a lot was going to be punted to future years. And we'll see if Democrats are able to accomplish what they couldn't this year in the next three.
Well, let's talk about what did get done this session. What were some of the overarching policy themes of the things that actually did happen, at least on paper?
Yeah, Democrats were able to pass 4 or 5 major pieces of gun legislation. They passed 3 new abortion bills. There were a host of housing bills passed, not the big ticket ones, but certainly some impactful ones. New climate regulations, changes to greenhouse gas emissions regulations. And then there was a water task force form for the Colorado River that'll spend the next year studying the river and, mm-hmm. and what the legislature might be able to do in future years to kind of tackle water scarcity and reduce use. So again, I think a lot of this was kind of punting forward to future years. And there was also a lot done to kind of implement programs that had been passed in previous sessions, whether it was the Behavioral Health Administration or preschool or changing the prescription drug advisory panel that will set drug prices. There was a lot done. It might not have been the sexiest stuff. I think the sexiest stuff maybe fell to the wayside this year. But certainly a number of big initiatives were passed by Democrats.
And I mean, and sometimes these initiatives seem like they're pretty profound, but when you get into the nitty gritty of the bill language, it's maybe not as powerful as it seemed in the summary. Can you tell us what is more appearance and what is actual substance?
Yeah, I like to describe the Capitol as a place where big ideas kind of meet reality. And a lot of times what happens is, you know, the lobbyists will kind of step in or legislative staff and say, this might not be doable. Here's what the cost would be. You know, in reality, this isn't something that's super feasible. And so you saw that happen to a lot of bills. It happens every legislative session. But, you know, there were important pieces of policy passed. One of the ones that people don't talk about that I think is really important is that lawmakers formed a state property insurance fund of last resort that'll be funded by private insurers. And basically, this is supposed to be a backstop for people who can't find insurance on the private insurance market. Really big change. It aligns Colorado with dozens of other states across the country. We were one of the only states that didn't have one of these. And it's going to be a major new government regulated program that didn't get a ton of focus or grab a ton of headlines, but it's a really important thing that the lawmakers did this year.
Well, it seems that there have been a lot of environmental bills as well. That's another one of those where it's like, is it really going to help or does it just seem like it? What's your takeaway on the environmental bills?
Well, one of the things that lawmakers did this year was pass a lot of tax credits for electric vehicles and new home heating systems, electrified heating systems, and then also for electrified lawn equipment. And I think that that's how lawmakers really see the future in terms of incentivizing Coloradans to switch away from greenhouse gas, you know, emitting fuel guzzling, carbon, fossil fuel guzzling equipment. And certainly, you know, you saw movement and a lot of legislation on that. There was a change to the name of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission that gives it kind of more power to regulate new forms of energy that I know the governor is pretty excited about. And then there were new benchmarks set in state law in terms of greenhouse gas emissions that will help the state get toward its 2050 goal of 100%. You know, renewable energy sources or zero emissions. So there were big steps taken on these things. Some of the really, really big flashy items that Democrats wanted, again, some of these bills started out as being much beefier. They were pared back in the process, but that doesn't mean that nothing was done.
And what are some of the big pieces of homework that have been left for the next session?
I think water is really the biggest one. You know, lawmakers started out this legislative session saying that water was going to be a focus, and then they ended up creating a task force, which is kind of like that is the most punting thing you can do as the legislature. My editor likes to joke that these are blue ribbon panels that get formed to kind of kick things down the road. So, you know, 16 member panel will have the next year studying this issue and come back next year to give lawmakers some things to chew on, some things to work on to actually take action to address the Colorado River water crisis.
And finally, I'm just curious, you know, when we spoke at the start of the legislative session, I asked you who are you really watching this legislative session? And you identified two new people who are just coming into the legislative process who won their first elections, Representatives Elizabeth Epps and Javier Mabry. How did it go?
Yeah, I mean, when I talked about those pieces of legislation that didn't pass this year, you know, I think of those two, whether it was the ban on so-called assault weapons or rent control or, you know, implementing so-called overdose prevention sites or letting cities use those. There's also, you know, a few other pieces of legislation that didn't make it through. And certainly they pushed their party in a progressive direction, weren't successful on a ton of their policies this year, but I think they made an impact and certainly changed the conversation and the calculations at the Capitol for a lot of people. So it'll be interesting to see if they can, how they bring those pieces of legislation back next year, what they try and do differently in order to push that stuff through.
My guest today has been political reporter and editor of the Colorado Sun, Jesse Aaron Paul. Thank you so much for coming onto the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami. It's time for Radio Nibbles, and I have John Lindorf here in the studio with me, along with a special guest. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon, and good morning, everybody out there in KGNU world. It's a lovely rainy morning, and so we all have our mugs of coffee here and toast, and I'm hoping somebody can pass the butter and the honey over to me. It's time for toast.
We're looking at somebody in particular for passing the honey, aren't we?
Yes. My guest today is Heidi Bogavate, and I think the best way to describe you is as a bee nerd.
Totally.
Right. You're not a professional honey beekeeper person, right? But you have a lot of bees.
We do have a lot of bees. I don't know how you really become a professional bee person,
but how did you get interested in bees?
Honestly, it was originally my dad who bought a bunch of bee gear and got bees, and he did it for a few years and then was kind of like, I don't want to do this. And so he came to me and my husband and he's like, do you guys want a bunch of bee gear? And my husband's like, okay. So we kind of inherited all this gear, and it was kind of like, well, why not? You know, I'm really into teaching the kids different things. We have chickens. We've hatched a lot of different things. We grow things. And I was like, well, why not? Let's get into it. And it turns out his dad grew up doing bees. We had no idea, never heard of it, never talked about it, but spent his whole childhood doing bees. So he taught us a lot, and he kind of came in and was like, hey, I know how to do this. And it turned from two hives into a lot, and we became obsessed. Mm-hmm. So we love them.
and your company is called
Nilo Bees. So
what does Nilo mean?
Nilo is actually what we call my son. So his name is actually Nils, and my dad is Nils Bogavate. And so we named our 4-year-old after my dad, and we call him Nilo. And so we were trying to find something to call it and our name for naming things. So we got a little creative and we were like, what are we going to name these bees? And we decided to name it after our littlest one.
So why is it important to, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air about, it's a chancy business with bees. You were saying that you recently lost some colonies.
Yes. So a big part of raising bees is that you do lose them. So no matter how good of a beekeeper you are, no matter what you do, every year you will have hive loss. And that is hard.
But they froze.
This year they froze. So that was an interesting one. Usually, most of the time, new beekeepers, you'll see an empty hive and they'll starve to death because you either took too much honey or they just ate more than you were anticipating, or you didn't feed them enough. Yeah. So in my world this year, it was very interesting because when we went to go check on them, we were expecting them to be okay. And the hives were full of honey, and not a little bit, like full, but they were clumped together and frozen, which tells me that for whatever reason, a lot of our hives this year could not stay warm enough.
So it's a chancy business even beyond problems with insecticides.
But did that happen during the big freeze, like at the end of December?
You know, we're not positive. We don't go into the hives during winter. They kind of go dormant under 50 degrees. So you kind of assume they're fine even when you're not seeing them fly. And so we didn't find out until recently when you go and you check on the hive and you go to make sure they don't need feeding. And we found big, heavy boxes. And we were like, okay, this is not supposed to be heavy. You're supposed to have been eating. So it had to have happened somewhat early because they didn't eat the honey.
So you have a lot of hives in Lafayette, right?
Not in Lafayette. So we have some in Boulder. We have two locations in Boulder. And then we have some at Red Wagon Farms, big farm area.
Oh, so they not the farm stand.
The farm stand, we don't have bees at the farm stand. We have bees at their large fields. And he's incredible. He lets us keep as many hives as we want there. He's a really great guy.
And Red Wagon Farms is just very well known locally for high quality produce and supplying restaurants. And
he's been extremely supportive of bees and of us. And the way he does his farm is very, very helpful for our bees because he does not use a lot of things that would be harmful to them. So we're very happy to have a partnership with him to have our bees there.
I have a question. You mentioned you have a young son.
We do.
Do you keep any hives in the backyard?
We do. So, depending on the time of year, right now we have two in our yard. The end of last year, I had about 6 or 7, and that was a little much. But they don't generally bother our yard. You probably wouldn't notice a whole lot more bees in our yard than some of our neighbors. So they kind of leave their hive and they kind of fly away. So it doesn't really cause issues. The type of bees we have are not super aggressive either. So like when you think of wasps, they're a little aggressive and kind of come and they sting you. As long as you're not bothering the bees, they generally don't bother you.
Well, I had wondered, like we had a discussion about bees last week, John, and I had a swarm visit my backyard and I'm like, can we keep it? And I really wanted to like keep these bees like in our yard, but it had to do with having kids running around where we're like, oh, we're going to have to find somebody to adopt it, but I really want those bees.
Yeah.
But let's talk about swarms. Mm-hmm. And that's what we talked about last week is that, you know, that's what bees do to form new colonies, right?
So
you'll see this ball of bees in a mm-hmm. tree or on a sign or on the side of a building. Mm-hmm. What should you do if you see it?
You need to call a beekeeper. So there's different routes to do that. Like, and this sounds strange, but tons of people post about it on Facebook.
But what you shouldn't do is...
Leave it. Do not leave it alone. Call a beekeeper.
No, but don't attack it. Don't bother it.
Don't spray it. They're really docile.
Keep people away from it and call a beekeeper, like, for instance, you.
Yeah. You know, if you're on Facebook, every community page will have beekeepers posting looking for swarms. You can call my husband and I, and I'll tell you where to call. There's also a swarm hotline. So you can call that.
There's a swarm hotline?
There is a swarm hotline. So
sounds like a horror movie, but okay.
It is. Kind of. Sounds like it. So what it is it's actually volunteers, and you can sign up to be on the swarm hotline and be one of the beekeepers in the area, and they'll put you in contact with a beekeeper. So if you can't find a beekeeper in your area who wants a swarm, if you don't know of one, even if you call one and they can't help you, like if somebody calls me and they're like, hey, I'm in Grand Junction. What do? I can walk them through the process. I don't mind doing that.
Of finding a beekeeper who can come and get
easy.
The bees.
Most people want bees. They're kind of expensive to buy. You know, you'll pay $200 for a package of bees. Whereas if you get a swarm, it's free bees. So a lot of starting beekeepers want these swarms. So they're not aggressive. When they're swarming, what they do is the half the hive decides, okay, this is too crowded. And we need to go create a new hive. So what they actually do is they leave with the current queen. And I don't know why they choose which half leaves, but half the bees leave. And before they leave, what they'll do is they'll eat a ton of honey. Mm. And think of like Thanksgiving dinner when you way overeat. You get kind of like docile and you get kind of like, oh, I just want to take a nap. That's what the bees are doing. They are actually super overfed, super docile, like, oh, they're not going to attack you unless you do something big to them. And so they leave. And I call it beepocalypse. It's like a big cloud of bees and it's loud. And then they're all going to clump into a ball and they're going to be really, really calm. They're not going to hurt you. There's no reason to spray them. You leave them be and you call a beekeeper. If you don't call a beekeeper and you're like, hey, let nature take its course, you have to think, what are they looking for? They're looking for a big empty space, primarily made out of wood. So really a big empty tree that's dead and hollowed out is where in nature where they would go. Our world doesn't have a lot of that. So where they end up going is your house.
Right.
So think soffits inside your wall. They really love those stone pillars on decks. Love them because it's a big hollow space. Unfortunately, we can't have bees living in our front porches without it causing issues. So if you see one, the very best thing you can do is call either the swarm hotline or a beekeeper and they'll come and take care of it before it moves into your house.
The other thing I think we can encourage people to do is to grow pollinator friendly flowers and plants and be aware of that. That's the one mm-hmm. thing you can do, and also buy local honey.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we sell honey and we don't actually profit. We generally do it just to cover our costs. Right. So I brought, or here's some honey. My husband actually brought it. So the honey tastes a lot different when it's from a local hive than your typical store-bought honey. So the pollen is coming from a very wide area. And the most interesting thing for me is that hives even half a mile away from each other will taste completely different. Their honey will not have the same flavors.
So this tastes fairly, it's not a really strong, intense flavor.
This one's not. So this is what we have. This is actually our late season honey of the hives that didn't make it. So we took those hives and we spun the honey. So different seasons will create different flavors.
How can people find out more information about Nilo bees?
We have a website, nilobees.com, and we also have on Facebook, and I'll post all kinds of different things we're doing, kind of periodically.
And it's
N-I-L-O.
N-I-L-O.
Yep. N as in no, I-L-O, bees, B-E-E-S. And this is honeycomb. So this is from a different
area. We're going to take this out into the hallway and eat it because we're running out of time. We're going to have an interesting conversation over in the hallway. Okay. And that is all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to Benita Lee, Pam Johnson, Alexis Kenyon, Jesse Aaron Paul, and John Lindor for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Black Talk with Michelle Simpson, but that's going to be coming up on the other side of these BBC News headlines.